VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Friends, we thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today, and seriously, we hope you listen very intently to our discussion today because we've got some important information we need to share with you. If you recall, this world was shaken when the Wuhan coronavirus moved across continent by continent and just took this world by storm. Some claimed, well, this originated from some wet market in China, but much more evidence pointed to gain-of-function research at a Wuhan lab. Well, it's now known as COVID-19, and we see its deadly effects continuing to impact this world. And now the chilling story about a possible Chinese-connected biological laboratory on American soil in a supposedly empty warehouse in the city of Reedley, California. What was found? How could this happen? Are there more of these labs across our nation? And why is communist China allowed to buy up American land when they're such a major threat to our sovereignty? We're going to be delving into these issues today. It's our privilege to have with us Frank Gaffney, Vice Chairman for Committee on the Present Danger, China. He's author of The Indictment, Prosecuting the Chinese Communist Party and Friends for Crimes Against America, China, and the World. He is host of Secure Freedom Radio. Frank, thank you for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
It's my privilege to be with you. Thank you, Jim.
Well, indeed, horror struck the minds of so many to know that a covert Chinese biolab might be operating here in the United States. I saw the code enforcement officer in Reedley, California, Jesselyn Harper, in an interview stating this is unprecedented. We've never had a biological lab in the United States busted before. Frank, if you would unfold for us this story, what do we know? What have officials found?
I don't know that we, in the public, know everything that is to be known about this by any means. What is in the public domain, as far as I can tell, is basically some information about the contents of this laboratory. And that would be dozens of refrigerators and freezers, some incubators, large quantities of toxic chemicals and highly contagious diseases, and some 1,000 or so, some of them dead, but some 1,000 apparently very highly genetically modified and expensive laboratory mice designed to have some kind of genetic traits akin to human respiratory, systems that enable them to contract and carry diseases, respiratory diseases like COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that was just an awful lot of nasty stuff, but that this the purpose of this laboratory was to do some sort of test kit development, experimentation, production. Honestly, from what I've been told, that doesn't seem terribly plausible. But one of our best experts on the Committee on the Present Danger of China, Dr. Stephen Hatfill, who has spent his entire life, I think, really working in and around issues involving biological warfare and defending against it. He's made the point in a very important webinar that our Committee on the Present Danger of China did, I think just last week, if I'm not mistaken, about this laboratory, that even if it was a relatively benign thing at any given moment, the nature of it, the inherent dual use capabilities that it had in it meant that it could be turned into a biological warfare laboratory mm-hmm. at whim, and in very short notice. I mean, like, you know, days, maybe a week or so. And the thing that he warned about in particular, as did the webinar more generally, is the fact that In the biological warfare business, the most effective agents are the freshest. So there is a considerable advantage if you're thinking about attacking something at some distance to get close to it when you cook up a batch. And then when you release it, it's likely to be as effective as you can make it. And the thing that's worrying about that is this lab maybe was in a relatively innocuous place, seemingly in the center of California, though it, of course, but happens to be.
Frank, I'm losing you here. Are you with us, Frank?
I can hear you. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay.
You
yeah.
Me?
Yeah. You're cutting out here.
I
think we must have you in a bad cell area because you're cutting in and out.
I'm sitting still in my home. So
okay.
Any better? Can you hear me now?
I sure can. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, the point is that in close proximity to this laboratory is a very important Navy facility. That if taken out with biological weapons would have a very, very dire impact on our Navy's capability to project power in the Pacific.
My.
So all of these are reasons to be quite concerned about this lab, and I think that the possibility, as you asked, rhetorically in your opening remarks, how many others are there like this?
Yes.
Is an open question.
Yeah, it is an open question. That's rather a frightening question. And I saw Front Page Mag quoting the Mid-Valley Times saying, and you alluded to some of this, but white mice had been genetically engineered to catch and carry the COVID virus. The illegal lab, they reported, harbored potentially infectious bacterial and viral agents, including chlamydia, E. coli, Streptococcus pneumonia, hepatitis B and C, herpes 1 and 5, rubella, samples of malaria, thousands of vials that contain unlabeled fluids. And this is leading some to ask the question, is this just a biohazard lab or a biowarfare lab?
Yeah. Well, I've called it at a minimum a toxic waste dump.
Yes.
It's a Superfund site, really. They now say they've cleaned it out. They've destroyed all that stuff. But that's the best case, is it was just a ticking time bomb, a mm-hmm. dangerous place. But in all likelihood, it had this ulterior purpose, I think. And if so, at what point would it have been turned on? And what would the targets have been? Anybody's guess right now.
Right. And the other question is, how could this be happening so secretly in our nation? How could this have advanced to this level? I mean, I can't believe that U.S. officials are completely ignorant on what's going on there. Somebody had to know.
It's a great question. In the webinar, we talked about the fact that depending on where they got these diseases, there should have been a paper trail. For example, there's some sort of American facility that makes them available to licensed people. And that would certainly have created a paper trail, as I say. But, did the stuff come from China? Not necessarily a paper trail. And one of our experts on this webinar, which I commend to your audience, by the way, it's available for free at presentdangerchina.org. And it essentially was the argument of a very accomplished former spy for the Central Intelligence Agency by the name of Sam Faddis, that our counterintelligence is just not up to scratch, that there should have been some understanding of what was going on in this facility. Nobody seems to even know it was there. It was supposed to be a vacant building.
Mm-hmm.
So we're far, far away from having the kind of, as the military says, situational awareness we need. And that's especially true if there may be others of these facilities dotted around the United mm-hmm. States.
And is there confirmation, though, that there is ties to Chinese medical firms from this lab?
I understand, and again, I'm not sure we know everything there is to know, but it's my understanding that when you run the various leases and corporate entities associated with it, they tie back to China. And they may have had something to do with one of any number, apparently, of Chinese companies that set up shop here after the COVID pandemic broke to generate these test kits. Apparently, most of them not very effective,
right?
But creating huge cover for operations that may have a very different purpose in mind.
Yes, and I mean, China, of all places, should know the devastating impact of COVID-19. You know, why would they even be experimenting with toxic chemicals on American soil here? That's another question that it just is baffling many. But it also really begs the question as to why is China here to begin with? I mean, communist China is a threat to our nation's sovereignty. Why are they allowed to own land and continue to buy land? I just was seeing a story on Frontline News last week. An electric vehicle battery maker loyal to the CCP announced it just purchased 270 acres near Grand Rapids, Michigan, about 60 miles from U.S. military armories, within 100 miles of U.S. military facility. But we're seeing this acquisition of land by communist ties all across this nation.
What this all suggests, Jim, is that we are not thoughtful about or even paying attention to an unhappy reality, which is the subject of a new book that I've written called The Indictment, as you mentioned earlier. That reality is that the Chinese Communist Party is at war with our country. It has been for decades in what they call an unrestricted warfare, but pre-kinetic phase. And the question that is before us now is, are they prepared to take it to the next step and engage in actual traditional shooting war kinds of operations in the near future? And I fear that is the case.
Very troubling. Not only, you know, the land, but Frank, I was also reading that the many residential homes are being purchased by Chinese buyers. Epoch Times reported China dominated foreign buying of U.S. homes in recent months, totaling some $13.6 billion. I mean, the infiltration is happening all over.
Yeah. Well, again, this is a centerpiece of the book, is that we have, in addition to the threat from the Chinese Communist Party, their friends here in the United States, who are facilitating these kinds of penetrations and enriching the Chinese beyond comprehension, enabling them to mount the kind of threat that they are to us at this point, militarily, commercially, and in every other sense.
You mentioned The Indictment. How is it our listeners can obtain a copy of that book?
Well, it's available wherever books are sold. I think at theindictmentbook.com you can order it, or Amazon or Barnes & Noble if you choose to. But it's meant to be a short, easily read means of basically trying to get your hands around what the Chinese are up to and why it poses such a mortal peril to us.
Frank Caffney with us here today on Crosstalk. A quick break before us, and we're going to come back to discuss more information, including the Chinese migrants illegally entering our country. And certainly the matters going on within the military, and we're going to focus on Taiwan and our U.S. military preparedness. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and author with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, are evolutionists still looking for the missing link?
Actually, Chris, missing links are everywhere in the fossil record. Now, evolutionists say that all animals came from a common ancestor. Yet these ancestors are missing, and the links between any two basic categories are missing. Missing links are still missing. Evolutionists used to admit that the missing links were a problem, but now they seem just to have stopped talking about them. They now propose the concept of punctuated equilibrium, which says that evolution went in spurts in the past. It went so fast that it left no transitional forms. I think the missing links will forever be missing because they never existed. God created each basic category as that category. They may have adapted to different conditions, but the basic categories got here separately. They were created back in Genesis.
For more on Genesis, visit us on the web at icr.org.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Frank Gaffney, our guest today, Vice Chairman for Committee on the Present Danger, China. He's also author of the book called The Indictment and available at theindictmentbook.com. You can get more information on it. Certainly, we're talking about the threat of communist China and looking at this Chinese biowarfare lab in California. It's a question mark. Is indeed this a biowarfare lab that's been uncovered? And how many more of these such labs are there in existence here across the United States? What is their real purpose for existence? You know, what is going on? What's the story behind the story in all of this? Frank, I know that there has also been growing concern about a route that Chinese migrants are utilizing to make their way to Florida illegally. The smuggling going on between the Bahamas and Florida. Do we have any kind of idea how many Chinese illegal aliens are entering our nation?
Well, I haven't heard any numbers on the migrants coming in through that particular route. But I've heard that there are more than 10,000 young men of military age who are unaccompanied, who appear to be wearing similar kinds of backpacks and canteens, and moving in groups that have been described by an old special operator turned war correspondent by the name of Michael Yon, who has observed them moving through the Darien Gap in Panama and up into Mexico and then across our border as probably elements of the People's Liberation Army. Now, that's a lot of perhaps special operators that are being insinuated into our country across that open southern border, and anybody else that's coming in through other ports of entry is, you know, additive to the problem.
Yeah.
And whether they have a similar character, I don't have any idea. But I would, if they're just, you know, when you think about what the damage was that 19 guys did to our country on 9/11, 10,000 trained special operators, if that's in fact what they are, could do incalculable damage inside our country.
Yeah.
And by the way, at taxpayer expense, as you probably know, they've been disseminated all over the country.
Yeah, we'll provide your travel, your transportation, lodging, take care of your needs, medical care, et cetera.
Full service.
Yeah, militarily, there are issues going on, too. I saw also reported last week about U.S. officials that are searching desperately for malware that they say hackers from China have implanted into our infrastructure to, well, to disrupt U.S. military operations in the event of, you know, the communist nation launches an attack on Taiwan. So got a couple of issues here. The malware and the issues in our military computer systems, how that would be, and then also the issue of Taiwan. So what do we know, if anything, about this malware from China? Why are we even going to China for technology for our military computer systems?
Well, that's a really good question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the fact that we even have to ask it strains belief, honestly. But again, it goes back to something I said, I think, before the first break, Jim. The Chinese have a term for what they've been doing to us since, I would expect, probably the early 1990s. Which is unrestricted warfare. And by that they mean that they have basically been using every technique they can conceive of to weaken us and ultimately to take us down. And so whether it's this massive, I've had estimates of something on the order of 300,000 cyber warriors in the People's Liberation Army or other services of the Chinese government, developing malware, developing other cyber warfare techniques, and waging cyber attacks against us. But that's just one piece of this. We just did a fascinating webinar today, as it happens. It'll be posted later tonight at presentdangerchina.org about what this company, BlackRock, the 10, by some estimates, $10 trillion funds under management, 900-ton gorilla on Wall Street, is doing on behalf of the Chinese Communist Party in terms of sluicing trillions of dollars from our capital markets. And that's money, by the way, that probably listeners to this show unwittingly have invested by BlackRock through pension funds that they manage and mutual funds and index funds and the like in Chinese Communist Party companies, including, by the way, some that work directly for the People's Liberation Army. Again, you just ask yourself, how on earth can that be, that we are paying companies to build weapons that are designed to kill us, kill our men and women in uniform, but probably a lot of others of us as well? The only way I can explain it is this, that a centerpiece of this unrestricted warfare operation over these decades has been what they call elite capture. And again, we talk about this at length in the indictment. The friends of China that have been enabling this, whether it's Larry Fink at BlackRock or whether it's Neil Shen at Sequoia or Steve Schwartzman, State Street and the like, these are people who are enabling our enemy, our mortal enemy, to become more and more and more capable and more and more and more emboldened, by the way, to think that they can take us down, which is their sole, you know, focus of effort at the moment. Their ultimate objective is to be the new hegemon of the world. That's been true, you know, I think going back to Marx's time. But this is their immediate and necessary step, is removing us as really the only impediment to the realization of that ambition. And so using all of these techniques, and quite possibly in the not-too-distant future, using, as I said earlier, the old-fashioned military kind of capabilities, which we've helped them build and put into place, naval, air, missiles, space, undersea, you name it, biological warfare included. They are, I think, now feeling they are good to go, and not just against Taiwan, but against us as well, which makes all the more urgent the rebuilding of our military. And I have to say, just very quickly, one of the things that's very concerning to me is Joe Biden, who is, well, frankly, the poster child of elite capture by the Chinese Communist Party, has appointed to become the next chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, a man who I think is woefully ill-suited to be the top officer, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in such a moment as this. His name is C.Q. Brown, not a household name. His principal passion, it appears, is advancing this so-called woke agenda, which is actually, I think, properly understood, a cultural Marxist agenda.
Yes.
And it's going to be devastating to our military if he's confirmed.
You know, I sometimes will try and put in different compartments in our mind, well, that's communist, you know, the Chinese Communist Party versus China. And people try to separate the two. But it's important to point out that the CCP is China and China is the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. It's one of the same.
I don't think that's true, honestly. I certainly hope it's not. I think one of the major focuses, again, of the indictment is it starts with the crimes against humanity, which have been engaged in by the Chinese Communist Party on an unprecedented scale in the course of human history. By some estimates that I find credible, 100 million people, most of them Chinese, Han Chinese, have been killed by the Chinese Communist Party since the revolution. And I think the vast majority of Chinese hate the Chinese Communist Party.
Good point.
Would like to be freed from it, and there are natural allies in trying to bring down this threat to them as well as to us.
So, Taiwan, how likely do you believe China is to take action against Taiwan? Is it your opinion that this would happen in this Biden administration?
My personal assessment, informed by the counsel of a lot of very smart military and other experts on the subject that we work with in our Committee on the Present Danger of China, Jim, is that it's about 100% probability.
Wow.
Now, how they'll take it, that's to be discussed, and we can do it if you'd like next up. But the main thing is, are they going to take us on directly as a means of assuring their triumph in Taiwan? And I think the chances of that are pretty high, too, yes.
Hmm. Especially with the
and during this Biden presidency or what's left of it.
And when you mentioned the unrestricted warfare, I mean, we're talking a multi-pronged possibilities that are there. I mean, we talked about the acquisition of land and many of these near our military establishments. We talk about the biohazard chemicals and so forth. We also talk about what's going on within the aspect of military and the decimation, the computer bugs and so forth that are there. It is multi-pronged. And you made reference as well here to the military assets. Our assets have been greatly diminished under the Biden administration. And that should concern us as well as to China's putting great sums of money into their military, and we are letting ours rust away.
That's so true, sadly. I take no pleasure in any of this, honestly.
Right.
I spent most of my professional life, you know, working with and for our national security, and what's happening here is an invitation to disaster. I had the law yesterday with a very distinguished former Air Force officer talking about the condition of the Air Force under this, our friends at the Heritage Foundation say in the 3 years he's been in charge of force, it's gone from being rated as, well, in terms of its readiness and other strengths, to weak, and now to very weak.
Yeah.
And that's an invitation to disaster in the face of a Chinese threat like we face.
And then to hear that, have the story break of the two U.S. Navy sailors arrested, accused of spying for China,
yes,
just for mere thousands of dollars?
Yes. And look, the question is, we're facing a whole-of-society espionage collection operation. So it's not just the odd sailor or scientist or academic who is, you know, giving them secrets. It's every aspect of the Chinese, you know, well, friends of mine have called it the Borg from Star Trek, you know, the collective, the hive, has been aimed at trying to steal secrets, to gain access to our advanced technologies, to exploit the weaknesses of our elites and otherwise strengthen them at our expense. And I feel very badly because I know those sailors probably at some point are going to offer as their defense, well, if the commander-in-chief has been selling out to the Chinese Communist Party, what's wrong with me doing my little bit?
Friends, we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to explore one other aspect with our guest here today, dealing with the Chinese infiltration into our education system as well, and the influence that that is taking place, and also, is there hope? Can this be thwarted? Can it be stopped? So we'll be discussing those issues in just a moment, and then we'll be opening up phone lines for you as well. So stay with us. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
The New England Primer was introduced in Boston in 1690 by Benjamin Harris. It was the first textbook printed in America. For a century after its introduction, it was the beginning textbook for students, and until well into the 20th century, it continued to be a principal text in all types of American schools. The founders, as well as millions of other Americans, learned to read from the New England Primer and the Bible. The core of the primer is its rhyming alphabet, such as for letter A, in Adam's Fall, we send all. The letter G, as runs the glass, man's life doth pass. It also included lessons for youth, Bible questions, and a shorter catechism. A pocket-size hardcover edition of this 1777 historical reprint is available for a donation of $9 or more by calling VCY at 1-800-729-9829. Ask for the New England Primer.
Friends, you'll learn more information on the topics we're discussing today at this website, presentdangerchina.org. presentdangerchina.org. And the book that our guest has written, Frank Gaffney, The Indictment, Prosecuting the Chinese Communist Party and Friends for Crimes Against America, China, and the World. And that's available. You can get more information on it at this website, theindictmentbook.com. Theindictmentbook.com. Frank, I see the infiltration that's going on. It's happening on the university campuses, major funds coming into universities. But I saw even disturbingly as well, Western Journal just reported this past weekend that China's tentacles are reaching into American public schools at a very alarming rate. A new report from the Parents Defending Education indicates that China has reached into 143 school districts in 34 states in the District of Columbia through its Confucius Classrooms program. And schools, well, they've been receiving some $18 million since 2009. And of these schools, the CCP has ties to school districts are near 20 U.S. military bases. But your comments on this infiltration in the university systems as well as into the lower grades as well.
Jim, it goes back to what we were talking about before the break. The leave no stone unturned idea has operated with respect to our educational systems and our kids. It's been a hardy perennial of the Marxist playbook to go after the kids. So this shouldn't really be a surprise. What's kind of a surprise, again, is that we've allowed them to get away with it to the extent that they have. And partly that's a function, let's be honest, of our own Marxists. You know, the march through the institutions, as the Frankfurt School called it back in the 30s, started with the academic sector. Literally the Columbia Teachers College initially. And it spread from there. But the penetration of both institutions of higher learning, as they're called, colleges and universities and graduate programs and the like, is bad enough. And there's been, I think it's the number that sticks in my mind was something like 110 or so of these Confucius Institutes on American campuses in the past. Some of them were closed up as a result of some bad publicity about what they were doing. But unfortunately, in a number of cases, apparently they've just opened up under a different name. Mm. And what they've been doing there, they've also been doing in, you know, the high schools and even down into the middle and I think elementary schools, which is using their presence and the offer, usually for pay, by the way, to these schools, mm-hmm. To teach Mandarin to their students and expose them to Chinese culture and so on, to actually begin indoctrinating them, the Chinese, you know, Communist Party, that is, in the marvels of China and the wonders of its, you know, system. And also, not infrequently, you know, what a bad place the internet is as well. Mm-hmm. And this is another whole other line of attack in this regard, as I'm sure you know, is what they do with TikTok, which, of course, is this wildly popular platform that particularly kids, not exclusively, particularly young people in this country, are addicted to. I mean, literally addicted to, because that's the way it's designed. It's designed to make sure that you can't put it down, because they reinforce the things that you respond to. And one of the things that they do, in addition to addicting our kids and encouraging them to, remain addicted, is propagandize them about, you know, what a terrible place the United States is and what a wonderful place China is.
Yeah.
And that's been going on. We've been allowing it to go on as we have these various institutional arrangements, with the predictable consequence that when you see polls that say lots of young people don't think much of this country, don't like capitalism, think that socialism is a better way, think highly of China and so on, it's as the communists used to say in the Soviet Union, no accident.
Right, right. So, friends, what you see happening in major communities across this nation as well, these uprisings and young people revolting, and this is all part of the plan. It is all part of the infiltration, part of the unrestricted warfare that Frank talked about earlier. Let me open phone lines. You can start getting online, 800-733-9829 with your questions or brief comments, 800-733-9829. But, Frank, this issue of the infiltration that we've talked about, you know, whether through these labs, the military, the educational system, the financial, which we didn't really get much into, but it seems so huge. I mean, can this be thwarted? Is there a way to hit reset on all of this?
Well, I say this everywhere, not just to your audience, but it's particularly relevant to your audience, I think, but it should be to all of us, and that is we better pray for God's grace in this moment, because we are very far down the tubes. All is not lost. And in fact, in our book, The Indictment, we have 20 specific action steps that we can take. It's up to us to take them. And I think, you know, the good Lord willing, if he hasn't given up on us, and I worry sometimes that he has had plenty of reason to do so, we'll pull through this. But we have to do our part. And I just wanted to say, I had as a very formative experience as a young man watching a man I actually wound up going to work for, Ronald Reagan, recognizing that there was a need for a major course correction with respect to what he considered to be his time's existential threat to freedom, namely the Soviet Union. And he used a group called the Committee on the Present Danger to try to put together a strategy continuing to appease the Soviets, or even just to contain them, but back. And he went to the American people in the election of 1980 with that plan, and he asked for a mandate to implement it, and he got it. And with the help of a lot of Committee on the Present Danger members, by the way, he implemented it. I was too young at the time to be one of those members, but I subsequently did have a chance to help him in that effort. And the rest, as they say, is history. We need a similar kind of course correction. We need a similar effort to take it to the American people and ask for their support for it. And we need a similar kind of execution of a strategy that we've tried to lay out in this book that will accomplish the mission and save our country from what the Chinese communists have in mind for us otherwise.
Friends, it's theindictmentbook.com, and learn more information there. Let's go to the phone lines. We're going to begin in Kentucky. And Robin, thanks for calling Crosstalk. You're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to ask a question. Thank you for taking my call. Back in, I can't remember the year, China was having a hard time getting into space. They had problems getting up there. And I talked to a man from Lockheed, NASA, and he said that they sent scientists over there to help them get into orbit. They were not, didn't know the angles and everything else. Why do we help them when they are really, in the past, was an enemy in Korea and Vietnam? Thank you.
Thank you.
Terrific question. The reason is that in the immediate aftermath of the collapse of the Soviet Union, the then general secretary, the top guy in the Chinese Communist Party, a fellow by the name of Deng Xiaoping, set about to implement a strategy he called hide and bide, which was basically a very calculated deception operation against the United States and others in the West to make them believe that if we let them become rich, they would become more like us, that we would, you know, find them, you know, members in good standing of the international community, and they would, you know, like we do, want peace and so on. It's one of the greatest abatements, if you will. And unfortunately, I think you're thinking of the Clinton years, in which we helped them not only get into space, we helped them perfect long-range intercontinental ballistic missiles with nuclear weapons on them, including multiple used technologies. And continue to do such in this day. To the point where two different studies, one out of Australia, one out of Washington, D.C., think tanks in those two places, have come forward and said, you know, we now have created, with the help of technology flows and investments and so on in China, advantages for them in dozens of critical technologies, advantages over us, to the point where even in the military arena, we have probably now lost the qualitative edge that we once had and relied on heavily.
Our next caller is Barbara in Kansas. Hi, Barbara. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, and thank you for covering this subject. I have, in the past, here in my state, worked for the school district, and I was aware that there were children, you know, and I got to know them, in our school who were from communist China. And the father of one of these children, in particular, was a PhD over at the laboratory, they call it the bio lab, over at the university. And then there, a lot of information came out about that time that they were upgrading the bio lab at the university, and, you know, and it was a big, you know, it was such a, you know, they were advertising and, you know, talking about all of the things that were going on and how fortunate we were and all of that. But, you know, my antenna went off. You know, I could just, I don't know, because I guess I've worked for government contractors in Washington, D.C. My husband was career military, and we've lived in other countries and around the world. And I, at the time, you know, was thinking, what are they doing at that laboratory? And that's been, you know, I'm sure it's still going on.
Barbara, thank you for that. And Frank, her radar was going off. We need our radar to go off, do we not?
Absolutely. You know, I've been fond of saying there's a lot of talk about bioengineering, including probably in that laboratory, Barbara. But I've often thought that what we've been doing in our own country is kind of genetically modifying the body politic in our country to excise the survival instinct. I mean, most of us are just not thinking about the true nature of a very dangerous world. And we take it for granted that we're the only superpower and we'll be immune to any problem and our oceans keep us away from bad guys and so on. It ain't so. Trying to get at in this book is really the nature of what we're up against and offer people ideas about what they best do about it.
Great. Thank you, Barbara, for the call. And again, that's presentdangerchina.org and theindictmentbook.com. We're just a few seconds from the break, so we're going to quick take the break. We'll come back to more of your phone calls. So people on hold, stay on hold, and we'll be back with you in just a moment. Frank Gaffney is with us today. He is vice chairman for the Committee on the Present Danger China, also author of The Indictment, which we've talked about here as well. We'll be back in just 1 minute here on Crosstalk on VCY America.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Since February 2018, after Captain Udell Myers, U.S. Marine retired, warned me about the coming military draft or a push thereof, I began to do a lot of shows on that topic, with him, in fact. Well, sure enough, a commission was formed by Barack Obama as he went out the doors of the Oval Office, along with John McCain. And the two of them formed a commission to study drafting America's daughters. They released the report in March of 2020. And as we expected, the commission is recommending to Congress to draft girls. Now we have the retired admiral, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mike Mullins, telling NPR families need to have a conversation around the dinner table about the drafting of their sons and their daughters. Now military.com has an article by retired military officer saying we need to bring back a limited draft. Pay attention. Do you want your children being drafted to fight a foreign war?
For Frank Gaffney is our guest here today on Crosstalk. And, yes, asking the question at the very beginning, is this a Chinese biowarfare lab in California? So much more needs to come forth on this. What, you know, what are the fingerprints on all of this? Where is it leading to? Where is the funding? Who's in the know on all this? Many unanswered questions that need to come forth. Taking your calls here today on Crosstalk, we're going next to Scottsdale, Arizona. We have Sharon calling, and Sharon, you're on the air.
Hey, Brandon, thank you so much for keeping us informed and woke. I appreciate you. My comment is for Frank. Hey, Frank, is China the only one that has explored the dark side of the moon? And also, what is the difference between imperialism and communism?
Hey, Frank.
I'm not sure that other nations have, on the ground, explored the dark side of the moon. The Chinese have. You know, we've been over it, obviously, orbiting the moon. But I don't think we've actually physically, had our people there or sent our spacecraft there. I could be wrong about that. But look, the only difference between imperialism and communism lies in the nature of the countries that engage in it. I think some countries have been, terrifically oppressive as imperialist colonizers, some somewhat less so. Some have left a legacy of the rule of law, for example, in the United Kingdom. That's obviously very different than communism. But the worst of the imperialists have been tyrannical and horrifically oppressive.
Yeah. Thank you, Sharon, here for the call. Just have a little cutout here. We're going next to Mike in Mount Pleasant, Wisconsin. Mike, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to comment on something I think has to be said. It amazes me how incredibly naive we Americans are. We let the Chinese buy our land, which is one of the biggest mistakes we could possibly make. And our young people are posting their innermost thoughts and activities on TikTok, which is a company owned by the Communist Chinese government. How naive and self-destructive are we?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for this, Frank. There just seems to be no scruples as to what information we're willing to put out there. I mean, every step we take, every word we think, just every photo, every location we've been at, there's got to be a collection point somewhere going on.
There is a collection going on at an unprecedented level by the Chinese Communist Party. It is aggregating what they call big data so that they can actually know just about everything there is to know about each of us. Some say they're actually creating kind of a digital double for us all. It's hard to get your head around that idea. But what they certainly understand is data is power. And when you marry it up with the kind of digital capabilities, we call it the digital gulag, that is real-time surveillance in China, mind for well. And unfortunately, the building blocks for that same capability are being put into place by our own government, incredibly enough. This so-called FedNow and central bank digital currency and digital passports and medical IDs and so IDs. These are all building blocks for that digital gulag. And the Chinese Communist Party is showing us what it looks like, and it's not the kind of free constitutional republic that we have long enjoyed and are now at risk of losing.
Mike, thanks for raising the issue. Peter is calling next in Burbank, California. Peter, you're on the air.
Thank you. Your guest had mentioned that the next pick for the Joint Chiefs of Staff is C.K. Brown for Joe Biden. I'm curious, what makes him so dangerous? I have not heard his name before, and I'm starting to look about him, and I figured I'd ask your guest, and he knows more about it than I do.
Great. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Some good resources available on this question, and I appreciate the questioner's interest. I think it's two things, basically. One is, as he the combat aid was expendable for sure, but in recent years, in positions, I think he has demonstrated a competence that should be disqualifying. As chief of staff of the Air Force, as I may have mentioned, the Air Force has gone from being rated initially as marginal, being weak, at a time when we are going to need that Air Force, quite possibly for a Pacific war. In addition, I think he has exemplified, championed, and is aggressively promoting this so-called woke agenda. And I think that's a wrong way to this.
Yep. And folks, we apologize. We're getting some cutouts here from our guest here. We're going to squeeze in one last call. This is Sheila from La Crosse, Wisconsin. Sheila, you're on the air.
Yes, it's more than our military and our schools. My husband worked at a plant here in La Crosse, and there's only four or five of these plants in the world, and they work with heat exchangers. And my parents came to visit, and they were not allowed to tour the plant with my husband. But a group of people came from China, and they were not more than allowed in. They were allowed to use cameras and actually to crawl in underneath the machines and look at the insides and take pictures.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Thank you for raising that issue, Sheila. Special privileges, Frank?
Yeah, listen, I'm sorry about the technical difficulties here. I'm not sure why we're having them. But, yes, there are all kinds of special privileges that go with the kind of elite capture that I think we've seen at the hands of the Chinese. People who typically get paid very handsomely to enable them to learn from us, to acquire our technology or other proprietary information, have recklessly, even given the seed corn of their enemies in ways that have resulted in but they've done it, and
friends, we're going to have to leave it there here today. Frank Gaffney, our guest, Vice Chair for Committee on the Present Danger, China. Websites, theindictmentbook.com, presentdangerchina.org. Frank, thank you so much for being with us today.
Privilege. Thank you.
And that's, again, Frank Gaffney and Vice Chairman for the Committee on the Present Danger, China. Check out their website, much more. But, friends, let me echo what he said. We need to be in prayer for this nation. God bless you. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.